On today's show, we talk with NFL linebacker, peak performance strategist, and keynote speaker, Matt Mayberry. This is the Eagles Talent Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Eagles Talent Speakers Bureau, for speakers who inspire, educate, and entertain. You can find us online at eaglestalent.com. Remember, you can listen to our podcast on our site, eaglestalent.com, or subscribe to it on iTunes by simply typing Eagles Talent in the search. Eagles Talent listeners, Matt, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
So let's get right into it. What age did you first play football?
I first started playing organized football when I was about six years old. I remember I first started off playing flag football my first year, and then I developed into tackle football, I believe, when I was seven. That's officially when I first started playing football. My dad was a football coach growing up. So I was very accustomed to the game of football, and I really loved it from an early stage of my life.
Right. So, I mean, really young, 6 years old that's extremely young to start playing. I know as a teenager you battled with addiction. What role did football play in your recovery?
It played a huge part. I mean, once I was able to get sober and kind of go to work on myself and really not only strive to become the best version of myself, but look to grow in other areas, football was really the foundation of that. Because for me, instead of turning to drugs in my life like I was doing for so long, I was able to put all of my attention, focus, and energy towards getting faster, towards getting stronger, becoming a better football player, hanging around the right people. So for me, football played an enormous role in not only me becoming sober, but also helping catapult me to the next level and really all facets of my life.
Is it safe to say that football, to some extent, saved your life?
Absolutely. I mean, when I go into universities now and even some high schools throughout the year, I'll always say, you know, you guys are playing a game that you may love, but to me, this game is much more special because this game saved my life. So absolutely, it seriously is one of the things, besides my parents, it's literally saved my life.
That's incredible. So during your senior year, you were offered 19 football scholarships, which is so impressive. Was playing for the late coach Terry Heppner your sole reason for choosing Indiana University?
Yes, it was. You know, I had a lot of better, I guess you could say, better offers, scholarship offers from schools that were traditionally better at football than Indiana University. I mean, Indiana notoriously is a basketball state. Mm-hmm. And obviously Indiana University is known for their basketball tradition and the success that they've had for the last couple decades. So for me, yes, he was the sole reason as to why I went to Indiana University.
What was that experience like playing for him?
It was an unbelievable experience. I mean, unfortunately, he passed away my sophomore year due to a brain tumor. But the time that I had with Coach Heppner, he was a mentor to me, a father figure, a second father figure to me. Just somebody that I learned so much about the game of life from. The relationship that him and his wife, Jane Heppner, had at the time. Just how he became a self-servant leader. Just everything that I really learned about leadership, football, marriage, overcoming adversity, how to motivate a team and develop the right culture all came from Terry Heppner.
That's great. How challenging was that transition from your high school team to a major D1 football program? Because I would imagine that's a jump.
It is. You know, at first it was difficult, and I played as a true freshman a bit too. So for me, it was the speed of the game is something that probably was the biggest difference. But once you got that down and you know, practiced more and played in more games and got your feet wet, it became, you know, just like anything, practice, you know, repetition, all those things are going to help you, you know, get accustomed to the game. So for me, I think by the time my third game, I was like, okay, I'm meant to be here now.
Yeah, you were in the flow of things.
Yeah.
So playing in the NFL means defying incredible odds. Can you tell us about that day that you signed with the Chicago Bears?
For me, it was a dream come true, and it really didn't turn out how I wanted to at first because, you know, as I mentioned in my book, Winning Plays, I was projected to be anywhere, you know, and drafted from anywhere from the third round to the fifth round. That's what most experts had me going at. And for me, I didn't get drafted at all. I went undrafted in the 2010 NFL draft. So for the first part of my draft night, I was absolutely crushed and depressed. And started to really question if I even had the ability to play in the NFL. Wow. But after I overcame all those self-defeating thoughts, I got a phone call from the general manager of the Chicago Bears at the time, Jerry Angelo. And he asked me if I wanted to become a part of the Monster of the Midway, which is the traditional Chicago Bears defense and linebacker style that they had for so many years and what they're known for. And for me, it literally was a dream come true. I mean, I still remember to this day when I was 6 years old running around my parents' house wearing a Walter Payton jersey, you know, pretending I was playing for the 1985 Chicago Bears. So for me, you know, even though I didn't get drafted, I didn't get the guaranteed money, I still was a part of that 1% that got that opportunity. And for me, it was that much more special because it was a hometown team.
Right, right. That's incredible. What was your first day of training camp like?
It was a very surreal moment. I'll never forget walking into the locker room, getting ready for training camp. And for me, I was a man on a mission. You know, I overcame all the self-doubt that I had of not getting drafted. Do I really belong? And the moment I stepped on, the practice field and went in the locker room and put on my pads for the first time, it was all about what can I do to make this 53-man roster? I was a man on a mission, but it was such a surreal experience from you know, seeing Brian Urlacher, Lance Briggs, and a lot of my former teammates that I grew up admiring. You know, I remember being in college and just admiring the way they played the game and their tenacity, you know, how they played the linebacker position. So for me, it was both mixture of a man on a mission, but also very, very, very surreal.
And I mean, that must have made just everything so worth it, everything before that and, you know, the struggle. At that moment, that must have been just an incredible feeling.
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the biggest regrets that I have, and the only reason why I say it's a regret is because I'm a big believer in living in the now and fully, you know, immersing yourself in the present moment. And for me, I think that I was so focused on making the 53-man roster and doing everything that I could to make the biggest contribution that I wish I did kind of take in the moment a little more of realizing, wow, I overcame a lot, and it's such a wonderful thing to be here. But I still very much really love my time as a Chicago Bear.
So after your career-ending injury, what led you to receiving the offer to speak at the leadership conference with Stedman Graham?
Yeah, so I met Stedman at an event prior to the event, and you know, we started talking and he liked my story and we had a couple mutual friends, and when they knew I was hurt, his publicist, and they reached out and said, hey, we know you're hurt right now, do you want to speak at this event? And for me, my first reaction was, there's not a chance, and there's no way I'm doing this. I got a D in public speaking in college. Wow. So for me, I didn't want to do it, but I eventually took that first step, got out of my comfort zone, and 7.5 years later, I haven't looked back since.
That's incredible. Wow, a D in public speaking.
Yeah, a D in public speaking and a D in English class as
well. Wow, and look how far you've come.
Yeah, for both of as a writer and speaker, you know, it's been one heck of a journey.
Yeah. Once you recovered from your injury, why didn't you go back to football?
You know, I started speaking a couple times. Word of mouth got around. I was out for about 9.5 months. It wasn't a career-ending injury by any stretch of the means, but for me, I was out for, 9.5 months in the NFL. It's called not for long for a reason. So the 9.5 months in the NFL as an undrafted free agent rookie is an eternity. But during the time I was out, word of mouth got around after I spoke at that first event, and organizations started inviting me to speak at their event, you know, whether it was a sales meeting, a leadership meeting. Mm-hmm. And I think during that 9.5 months I was hurt, I spoke about 30 times. And when I was all healed up and ready to go back to football, for me at that moment, I discovered my purpose and passion. My coach, Terry Hettner, always told me, football is what you do, it's not who you are.
Right.
And I knew at that moment what he was always saying to me what that finally meant, because I knew that football has done a lot of wonderful things in my life, but this is what I was put here to do. This is my purpose, my mission, and really what ignited me, what really helped me come alive.
Right. What incredible advice from the late, great Terry Heppner.
Yeah.
An attendee at one of your speaking events recently said, "I've been to many motivational speeches, but I've never been inspired to take immediate action until now." Why do you think your presentations ignite such passionate responses?
You know, for me, I think number one is, I am who I am. Like, authenticity, I'm a big person. I'm being 100% authentic. And I think that when I'm on stage, the passion and enthusiasm for what I'm speaking about and really making a difference in the world really comes through to attendees. And they can see that I'm not trying to put on a show. Right. I'm not trying to act a certain type of way. You know, this is me, and I am this way because I'm incredibly passionate, not only about my journey, but making more so a big difference in the world and making sure that everyone becomes the best version of themselves and achieve enormous goals and dreams that they have for their life. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, I've really over the years become obsessed with providing actionable material, ideas and strategies so attendees can implement into their daily life that's going to change.
Right.
Their results come Monday morning at 8 a.m. You know, it's one thing to be motivated, but I not only want to motivate and inspire you, which that's going to happen, but I want to provide you with actionable ideas and strategies that you're going to be able to implement into your life the second I step off stage.
That's great. So fear of failure is a common issue that many companies face. In your book, Winning Plays, you describe failure as one effort among many to move forward, to become the best you can be. It is a journey of learning from multiple failures and turning them into success over and over again. What would you say to an organization that struggles with fear in the face of adversity?
You know, I think number one is that all great things come from stepping out of your comfort zone. You know, whether we're talking about an individual, a leader, or we're talking about an entire organization and the culture of that organization, I think during my time as an NFL athlete, but also now in the business world for the past 7.5 years, the best of the best from an individual standpoint, the high achievers, those that create legacies far much bigger than themselves, as well as the Apples, the Disneys, the New England Patriots of the world, regardless of what industry we're talking about, they're all obsessed with every single day doing something that scares them. They're not going to be afraid to innovate. They're not going to be afraid to move the needle in a culture development, teamwork standpoint. Every single day they're going to do something that's going to help move them further to what that vision is, to what that mission is that has the organization, you know, eventually 5, 10, 15 years where they want to be. So for me, I think it's creating that culture that lets people know that it's okay to fail. It's okay to hit adversity because that's what we want. We want to inspire change. And the one way to do that is to create that with the culture.
Right. And I think fear, like you said, the Apples and the Disneys and all of those companies, fear is key to innovation. So that's great.
Absolutely.
So last question, what is next for Matt Mayberry?
You know, next for me is I'm currently working, starting in the very beginning process of my next book. But besides that, just doing what I'm doing, you know, traveling around the world, speaking to organizations and inspiring their people to become the best version of themselves, lead through change more effectively, and most importantly, achieve breakthrough performance. For me, it's doing what I'm doing, except on a much larger scale. And I also have a column with Entrepreneur in Fortune magazine. So between speaking, working on the book and my columns, I'm definitely staying busy and staying true to my purpose and passion, which is, doing that.
So, Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. Listeners, be sure to visit Matt Mayberry's page on eaglestalent.com. And thanks for listening, Matt. Thanks again.
Thanks so much for having me.